Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision Radio Show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Fission radio show. Thank you for joining us today. It's March 29th, 2017, 8 o'clock in the morning here in Eugene, Oregon. Thank you for joining us, and please remember to share our station with your friends and family. Do tell them they have to go online and type in www.ucy.tv/AOF. to catch our show every morning from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Thank you for joining us. Today we have returning a friend of our show, Mr. Chuck Johnson from Oregon Physician for Social Responsibility. He's driving, so some of his sound may go in and out, but I appreciate his time. Thank you, Chuck, for joining us. Really appreciate your time.
It's great to be here. Sorry that we are in transit.
Yeah, well, that's all right. You're out doing what you're supposed to be doing, which is, you know, saving our planet. So I appreciate you giving us your time while you're getting your things done. So why don't we share first with our listeners? I know you've come back here. We've talked about closing the Columbia Generating Station. Why don't you share with our listeners some of the activities that you're doing to actually achieve that goal, which seems to be getting closer and closer, does it not?
Well, it is. It's been slower than we'd hoped because you would think that having a reactor designed similarly to the one that once it melted down in Japan would cause people in the surrounding area to decide to close such a plant down. But unfortunately, people's memories fade quickly, and especially when you've got a thousand workers in a community that supports nuclear energy very heavily, like the Tri-Cities in eastern Washington. So far, our strategy has been to convince the publicly owned utilities that own a part of the Columbia Generating Station, the formerly known as the Washington Public Power Supply System, or WPS, Nuclear Plant Number 2, out on the Hanford Nuclear Reservation, to close the plant. They actually have a contract with Bonneville Power Administration. It's 27 Washington publicly owned utilities that sell the power directly to Bonneville Power Administration. Bonneville then sells it along with all of its hydro to publicly owned utilities and other utilities in the Pacific Northwest. It's about 11% of Bonneville's power and roughly 4% of the electricity we use in the Northwest, and can be replaced, as we've demonstrated. We've hired an economist, Robert McCullough, indicated we could save money by replacing it, and that there was enough energy available currently on the market that we wouldn't actually even need to build additional generation to replace it in the Northwest currently.
We got a copy of that report. It's actually pretty intense, that report that Robert McCullough did. He went through it and unequivocally showed that it's really financially ridiculous. It's way better for the Northwest to just shut it down.
Right. And but because people are concerned about climate change, and rightly so, and worried that you'd end up burning additional fossil fuels, namely natural gas, in order to replace the plant, we did a study that was just completed about a month and a half ago, showing that we could replace it with wind and solar, and by using hydro to back that up at less cost than continue to operate it. Not as advantageous as just buying on the market, but still cheaper than running the plant, because as these plants age, they need repairs, and they're very labor intensive. You have to have a lot of people working at them because they're large, dangerous plants that need to be maintained. So we have this information, but as we all know, facts don't necessarily rule the day. Political power does, and so we've got to translate these facts and in ways that people can absorb them and then empower people in the communities that are part owners of the plant to tell their utilities that they'd like to get it shut down. So far, only Seattle has done that of all of the 27 utilities that are part of Energy Northwest. We're working on Tacoma, and we're doing some work right now in Snohomish PUD, which is just north of Seattle. And we've been off and on lobbying the Clark County PUD. They were very concerned, the commissioners, they were very concerned about the climate issues, and now we're hoping that this study will help us be successful there. The publicly owned utilities in Washington that are part owners are not the only ones who are getting power through Bonneville, obviously. And so recently we've been talking with a couple folks, including you, about trying to get a campaign going in Eugene with the Eugene mm-hmm. Water and Electric Board to get them to take a position urging Bonneville from their end to end the contract. The Bonneville Power Administrator actually has the power to end the contract if he chooses, but if he doesn't have enough political cover to do it, he could never do that. And so far, only having Seattle take that position doesn't really give him it's not showing the groundswell of support that he probably would need politically to do it.
That we need all across the whole Northwest, yeah.
Right. Especially in the Trump administration, we sat down with Elliot Mainzer. Their environmental groups meet with him quarterly. I try to attend those meetings whenever I can. And right after Trump was elected, he said, well, we don't really think this is going to affect us too much as long as we keep a low profile and don't do anything too out of the ordinary. And my heart was sinking as he was saying that, because I'm thinking, of course, something that would be quite out of the ordinary would be for him to decide to close a nuclear power plant. I think that would definitely attract the attention of the Trump administration, which he reports to. The Secretary of Energy is the boss of the Bonneville Power Administration. And they give the Bonneville Power Administration a lot of leeway ordinarily, but ultimately they still could tell him what to do, and they can remove him, as an administrator. They can fire him and replace him. So that does make it even more difficult for him to just go do things that would be out of sync with what his bosses would like.
Well, I know I've called EWIP. My commissioner's been completely unresponsive, has not contacted me back at all. So I think this is how they do it, too. They're like, oh, well, we just didn't get your message. We just didn't hear it. And they keep going on with business as usual.
Well, I think we need to schedule a community meeting in Eugene. Yeah. I think Eugene is the place to do it in Oregon, because it's the biggest utility, and there's a lot of progressive folks in Eugene who would probably rally to a message of closing a nuclear plant. And so let's resolve, you and I, that we'll do that after the show.
Not necessarily today,
but very soon.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, it's worth putting pressure on them, because really, honestly, it's completely outrageous. And the way they manipulate the information on eWeb's Facebook page here, it talks about it's the power sources come from hydro, biomass, wind, biomass, hydro, solar, and wind. It does not say anything about nuclear at all.
That's interesting. Well, if
yes,
they're buying
it does.
From Bonneville, it would be a tiny fraction, but it would still be something.
So. Yeah, it's. I think it's, what, 4%? I think they're mandated to buy 4%. They have to. From what I understood, they're required to participate in it, that they have to take some of it, and that, you know, our objective is to get them to say no to all of it, and they've never really done that. They've never even acknowledged it, frankly. This was something I was doing a few years ago also. When I first met you, Chuck, a few years ago, I was engaged in getting some action on this. And again, we hit a brick wall. There's just zero response. It's almost like you just have to show up at the meetings and start speaking out, because they don't return your phone calls.
I think that's true. You know, I mean, this is an uncomfortable topic in public power circles, because the old whoops projects still kind of loomed large. I mean, they tried to build 5 nuclear plants at the same time in the 70s and 80s and only finished one of them. And there are still people around who are involved in those projects. Some of them are still on the PUD board feel like they should have been allowed to finish all of their nuclear projects, and the nuclear power is misunderstood, and the people against it are a bunch of nuts, et cetera, et cetera. So,
yeah, well, they, you know, they look like we're completely illiterate, like we don't know what we're talking about. You just don't understand. I mean, the lies surrounding nuclear is so beyond comprehension that it is perpetrated every level of government.
Right. And the locus of it in the Northwest is Richland, where people have made their livings on things nuclear, and they want it to continue. So they get furious when anyone questions whether that's a good idea or not. And,
well, the whole thing of Richland was built on secrecy.
Right, and it was publicly built, too. So these public utilities, you know, we like to think of socialism and public ownership as being a great progressive thing, but it's also linked to giant public works. And what could be more of a giant public works than building nuclear weapons? Job of the people in the Tri-City. And the positive side of this was supposed to be nuclear energy, where you take this destructive power and use it for good. People in that community still believe that's what needs to happen going forward. And then they get mad. They believe that the old technologies are mostly really good. They've had a few problems here and there, you know, Fukushima here, Three Mile Island there, but by and large, they claim no one's been hurt. They believe it themselves. So.
Well, that's totally hilarious. They act as if Fukushima is over with. Fukushima is an ongoing disaster that is actually destroying the Pacific Ocean. I mean,
right.
It's ongoing, and now they still don't know what to do. They're talking about, you know, those billions of bags they've accumulated. They're going to start using them in parks and recreational centers. I mean, it's laughable, but it's insanity. It's beyond comprehension. The complete disregard for life on our planet is just astounding. I'm still amazed by him. I mean,
feel really bad for the people who lived around that site, and they're now having this horrible dilemma of having their support being, you know, cut off unless they
move back in.
Move back in, yeah.
It is really sad. Yeah. Well, the hard part is we're sort of all like that. Like, we're being forced to buy energy from a nuclear power plant that is losing money. And I mean, the state doesn't just automatically shut it down. And frankly, it is killing people. The cancer rates along the Columbia River are very high. I mean, it's even in Richland that the microencephaly is rampant there, and they're in a state of, the worst part to me about the nuclear industry is the state of denial that we're all expected to live in. We are expected to click our heels, say Sieg Heil, and deny the harm that radioactive contamination causes everybody. It's all a big lie. You know, I find that to be the hardest part, is it impinges on our right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I mean, we have basic rights that have been taken away permanently by these people.
Well, it starts with, you know, it's inconvenient for the powers that be for this to have turned out as poorly as it has. And so as far as they're concerned, it did, you know.
That's a good phrase. It's inconvenient. Yeah.
I mean, they had the scenario was looked beautiful in the 50s. You know, we're gonna beat swords into plowshares. You know, we're gonna turn this destructive power into this wonderful servant of humanity that will, you know, provide us with cheap, abundant electricity. But of course, it's hubris.
Well, you know, they could have if they would have taken the time.
Yeah.
I'm convinced if they had taken their time to understand it and not use 19th century technology to run a 21st century idea. You know, the big thing is the way we do it, like the way the whole system is. I mean, I'm often amazed at how they say it's green, because from cradle to grave, from the time they start mining it until the end of it, when they're having to deal with disasters, it uses a lot of fossil fuel. It does not use, it only uses no fossil fuel and gives us carbon free if it's running properly. But to get it there, to build it, and to deal with the inevitable leaks because they neglect it, it uses way more energy than it could ever output. The equation does not equate. And for me, this is why we know it's all related to the war machine still, because there's no conversation that we don't need it.
Well, I think that's definitely true when you look at the countries that want to get nuclear power. You know, it's when countries look at it and they think, oh, this is, you know, this is what all the modern countries are doing. You know, we need to get nuclear power. And then they actually start to figure out the cost of it. They start to go, oh, well, okay, maybe not. But the countries that have the secondary, you know, hidden agenda of, yeah, but it would be nice to have some nuclear materials in case we want to become a nuclear weapon state. Those are the countries that are going for it. In the Middle East right now, there's a ton of nuclear plants that are either under construction at the United Arab Emirates or under consideration for Saudi Arabia.
God forbid.
Those are countries that have been worried about Iran's potential nuclear weapon because of this Sunni-Shiite split, and then also have for years been upset about the fact that Israel has nuclear weapons and none of the Arab countries do. But Vietnam, which looked at it, realized we don't need this. And do we really need nuclear weapons? Probably not. So, no, they decided not to build nuclear power plants. They had originally thought they were going to build four of them, but they canceled. And most intelligent countries that really look at it, and intelligent companies and intelligent communities, decide that it's there are just too many downsides to it.
There is, that's true, and that's actually the real reality, is if they look at the whole picture, and if they're not under pressure from the United States to build one, I mean,
right.
Honestly, smaller countries have been coerced into building one, and they don't really have a choice. You know what I mean? You either want our help and you get our money, or you don't build it and you don't get any money. And that's the game that they play around. I mean, again, it's all about, I mean, I'm not actually shocked that we have the Trump nation, that Trump got elected, when we consider that we've been living in a country where we've built our entire really history based on lies and alternative facts, especially since the nuclear industry was created. It's nothing but lies. It's never been good. It's always been harmful. And frankly, we're losing a million birds a year right now. And it's not just from climate change. They say it's all from, you notice if you ever look up the mass animal deaths, they never say that it was people got killed from nuclear contamination. It's always the avian flu or some mystery disease, or they just don't understand it. But we're losing a million birds a month now around the world. That's a lot of birds. I mean,
and you think it's due to nuclear?
I do. I personally, myself, Chuck, I'll be honest, I think that the term climate change was created to cover up the contamination that we have on this planet. And I genuinely believe that the unmitigated nuclear pollution that has gone on around the world, it isn't the sole cause, because there's a lot of other technology pollution that has been compounded. But I believe that between nuclear and the technology, just pollution that we poured into it is what's caused the warming of the ocean. Like, well, we know for a fact that circling the earth is big plumes of radioactive contamination. The birds cannot be flying up there through that and not be affected, period. And it is affecting the way the sun interacts. I mean, we haven't even really studied how nuclear contamination affects our climate. Think of that.
Well, I am thinking about it right now. I just think you're wrong. I think that the study of climate is pretty extensive, and it has to do with CO2 and methane, and, you know, greenhouse gases. It doesn't have anything to do with radioactive materials. That's
yes.
a separate issue. They're both problems.
No, they're not separate. This is where I think they blend in. The radioactive contamination affects the microcosm and the life inside the ocean, where it's warming, it's contributing to warming the planet. That's my position, is that it's contributing. It's not the sole cause, but I think it's a massive contributor. They've never studied it, Chuck. It has never been honestly studied, never honestly, not one time. I've looked.
Lonnie, after we get done with this radio, I promise you, I will talk to people working on climate issues and ask them to what extent heating radioactivity is heating the planet and if it's ever.
Well, that's because they're going to tell you, their blanket answer is going to tell you, oh, it has nothing to do with it. But what they've never considered is, think about this. We dropped how many bombs? How many bombs have been dropped and nuclear tested over the oceans? And the nuclear contamination, how long does plutonium last? Half-life, 24,500 years. You're going to tell me that the bombardment of our Pacific oceans that filtered into the water didn't just dissipate. I mean, I think it went into the ocean, it mixed in, and it caused the microcosms inside the ocean to manifestly change, to change how they interact with their natural environment. And we have so much nuclear contamination going into the oceans, especially for 6 years now from Fukushima. And yes, it's the amount is small, but it doesn't all dissipate. And I think that it upsets the natural biology of the oceans and the heating. I think it creates an atmosphere, so it kills the microscopic little creatures that help keep the oceans and the flora healthy. And I have looked. If you can find a study that where they have looked at a specific area for even 5 years to see how the changes have happened, send it to me, because I've looked. And I think that this is part of the denial, the blanket denial. No. Climate change is a separate issue, but I believe that that statement fundamentally comes from the nuclear industry, who doesn't want us. It's kind of like the WHO, for example, was not allowed to go into Chernobyl for 5 years after Chernobyl happened, because the IAEA has censorship authority over them. They were not allowed to go into Chernobyl for 5 years, and they were only allowed to study three types of cancer, and only in children. So now what does the IAEA say? After a nuclear explosion, we know that it causes no real harm except for children after 5 years and only three types of cancers. I mean, we've had to fight and argue. Scientists have had to argue and fight and figure out how to get their studies done on their own because the system does not support them.
That part's true, but the link between radiation release and climate change is, I think you're barking up the wrong tree.
I think it's not been studied. I don't believe that they've even honestly looked at it. From everything I've looked, I looked for study after study. There's really been no studies on it. There's no scientific.
You think all scientists are dishonest because they aren't willing to study this or something?
No,
or
I think that they're
studying it.
I don't think that they're. I think what's happened is that there's just no money to study it. This is how they have cornered the market on this. They control who gets paid. They control the scientific community. For example, I saw 13 scientists.
So the nuclear industry is more powerful than the oil and
oh, for sure,
industry.
Because they're connected to the military. I saw this panel of 13 scientists in Southern California. I watched them. They were talking about the seals, the catastrophic event that's happening with the seals in Southern California. This was about a year ago. And they couldn't figure out why these seals are dying. Someone in the audience said, "Did you test them for radioactivity?" They said, "Specifically, we did not. We specifically did not test for radioactivity because that was not in our budget. We specifically had to exclude that." And the woman who said it, her eyes filled up with tears as she said it. They are not allowed to study it, period. The funding is not allowed. And frankly, at the universities, I think students are being misinformed. I had a student from the University of Oregon argue with me that France knows how to handle their nuclear waste contamination and recycle it, and that they're far advanced over the United States, and they have no problem with nuclear waste in France.
Yeah, I think a lot of people believe that incorrectly. But so in terms of the not studying the amount of radioactivity, there are studies being done of fish in the Pacific, on the west coast of the Pacific. They are finding cesium in the fish from Fukushima. So, you know, that is being studied. And it's not an enormous amount of it, but the fact that it's found at all indicates that, you know, that this is obviously spread throughout the entire Pacific, being picked up by fish and wildlife. Now, I don't think that that's at a level that would, I don't know where your link is to how that affects climate change.
Well, 6 years of 300,000 tons of radioactive contaminated water, 6 years. Trillions of tons. We have been, and on top of that, in Europe, they've been doing nothing but, you know, pouring their radioactivity nonstop into the English Channel. It's been from France. They haven't dealt with it. So we have the nuclear industry worldwide has been grotesquely negligent in how it handles not only the uranium mining and the uranium tailings, but grotesquely negligent in how they handle the waste. And we've had 70 years of these lies. And for example, St. Louis is a perfect example. It's not mm-hmm. that it is the cause. I'm not saying that it is the cause, but I think it is a major contributor. And well, I mean, for one thing, I mean, I think it's a major contributor in the effect of the ocean that has not been studied. But for like the million birds that are falling out of the sky every single month, we've got radioactive plumes now setting up all around the planet. And there are some studies that are being conducted about that because some people are beginning to connect that. But those studies are just now beginning because this crisis of losing a million birds a month is freaking people out. So people are beginning to really expand their look at what's going on. And I think
let's talk about the birds here for a second. There are studies being done of birds and the effect of radioactivity on birds.
That's
and
right.
It's a lot less catastrophic than what you're describing. What they're finding in Chernobyl and at Fukushima, and this is Tim Musso from University of South Carolina, is that the rate of genetic mutation is much greater as a result of their exposure to radioactive materials. and that they're having additional, you know, health effects and other things like that. They're not showing, you know, enormous elevated mortality that you're describing. They are showing that the population are not growing as they should in an area that where there's no human activity. There ought to be, you know, they ought to be growing, but they aren't. The wolves are not growing in population. They have, you know, they've reached sort of a level, but it's they're not. There was a television special that was done by BBC or someone, I'm not sure, but it was called The Wolves of Chernobyl, and they talked about how the whole ecosystem in around Chernobyl, because humans were taken out, was thriving. And what Tim has found is that, no, it's not thriving in the sense these are not healthy populations, but they're doing better in some ways because you don't have to compete with humans. So, I mean, I think we need to be realistic about what contamination means. It means, in many cases, not mortality, but sickness in various ways. And so, and that's true in human populations, too. We know that cesium can weaken the heart muscle because cesium is like potassium, and you have potassium in your muscle. So you can increase the amount of if a person has heart problems, it can make them make their hearts weaker still. You know, it could affect a lot of your organs.
Okay, folks, I think I disconnected even myself. Let's see if we can get this one going on again. Maybe that'll make it better. Hold on, Pecan. Oh, man. Good morning. This is Lonnie Clark. Chuck, are you there? Hello? Chuck, can you hear us? Well, I don't think Chuck hears us. I see him up, but I don't know if he's here. So let's keep holding on just a little second here, see if he can get in through. Let me see. Do. We hate it when this happens. We hate this when this happens. So let's keep doing it. We're going to lean into this and get through this, folks. I'm going to try to reach him and have him add into the call. Make it through. So here we go. Hold on. See if it's going to work. I'm calling him.
Lonnie?
Here we are, finally. Yay.
I don't know what's going on.
Well, the phone call disconnected, and then I was trying to call you while you were calling me, and somehow the Skype couldn't understand that. So welcome back. Welcome back.
Well, I'm glad to be here again.
So me too.
I don't know where I got cut off. I think I was talking about the studies of Chernobyl, and the animal populations are living, but they're not healthy. You know, they're not a healthy population.
This is really my point here. And I talked to Dr. Busby about this. I think that this whole thing, they call these birds massive. I mean, we are losing about 1 million birds a month around the planet to avian flu. And I think what's happened is that we're not talking about the reality. I think we have been living 6 years with Fukushima spewing massive plumes into the air, and I think it's harming our planet in ways that's not even being looked at. I know that standard climate change scientists reject that idea, and they say that that's not true, but it has not been studied, and they will not even discuss it because they're afraid that if we do discuss it, then we'll increase our dependence on coal. Which is a leap. I've had this conversation with a couple of people, but I mean, there's no proving it because there's no scientific studies. It's just my intuitive thought that nuclear pollution is causing more harm than is even being admitted because of the way the nuclear industry is run by the military. It's not meant for public good. It's only meant for public good as a second thought so that we can accept it and keep it around. I mean,
yeah, I think that was the initial idea. It was sort of a public relations campaign for weapons. I think they believed it initially, and some of them still believe it. But you know, they go to great lengths to try to convince people that this is a positive thing and necessary. The latest has been, of course, fighting climate change, and that's also a false choice. You know, we've got fossil fuels that are pumping CO2 into the atmosphere. You've got methane gas that's itself a greenhouse gas, and people are worried about that. So they say, okay, well, this is the latest reason why we have to use nuclear power, because it doesn't, you know, have as large a carbon footprint. It does have a carbon footprint, as you correctly point out. It is less than these others, but it has all these other side problems that are huge. You know, they claim that they'll be able to solve the waste problem by creating new reactors that burn more of the long-lived radionuclides, but it doesn't make the waste go away. It still leaves some very, you know, all the cesium, strontium, et cetera, those elements that were the problem after Fukushima and Chernobyl are all still present in the waste that comes out of these magic new reactors that supposedly make the waste go away. So you have at least this problem of 300 years of toxicity of cesium and strontium. And, you know, last time I checked, the United States isn't 300 years old yet. So
right,
300
exactly.
years is still a fairly long period of time to try and keep things out of the environment.
Which they've made, and that's what
that's
one of the things I really did want to talk to you about, because I know that Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility, you're going around and you do work with climate change people who want to, you know, that are seeing the connection between shutting this down and real effective environmentalism. But what has there been any discussion in with the people that you're talking to about these changes that President Trump has recently signed into, that it's like a free-for-all on the dumping?
Oh, you mean you're talking about the fact that he's now wanting to restart the Yucca Mountain process that was stopped
and
by
the nuclear, the
Obama
waste.
Administration?
I mean, they lessened the regulations for the waste dumping. I mean, it's beyond comprehension. It's by extension. They didn't specifically say nuclear, but by extension, you know that that's going to happen with a weakened EPA and an NRC. It's bound to happen.
I think you might be right. I mean, that was already happening in previous administrations. After Fukushima, the Obama administration increased the allowable amount of radiation that Americans can be exposed to after an accident, which was a terrible thing, which a number of our groups opposed, but they signed it into an EPA rule in January, just before the Trump administration came in. This was the Obama administration, and there were people lobbying the EPA administrator not to sign that order, but she signed it. You know, so the nuclear power industry has had a lot of federal support. Ironically, the interesting thing is that in the Bill Clinton administration, it had less. That was the one little pause there. After the end of the Cold War, they canceled breeder reactors in the United States, and Clinton didn't subsidize the construction of nuclear power. We didn't have much nuclear power in the 90s that started. And it wasn't until Bush Jr. got in and then Obama that they've been trying to revive the nuclear power industry. So, and of course, Trump wants to just continue that as well. I don't know. It's frustrating, the economics so far is what's really been the biggest problem for nuclear power, because with our regulators bending over backwards to try to permit it and try to, even reduce the amount of liability they'd have in an accident, et cetera, the bottom line is that the first go-round in the United States of nuclear power was such an economic disaster that Wall Street won't touch it unless everything that's built has giant federal guarantees behind it. And that's, you're talking about tens of billions, and if you really want to build on a large scale, hundreds of billions of dollars that the United States is busy throwing at the Pentagon in other ways, you know. Nobody is even the most dedicated nuclear power people don't seem to have the clout to pull off that kind of a subsidy. So it just kind of limps along. They've got these four reactors that are way over budget that are being built in Georgia and South Carolina that are causing Westinghouse and Toshiba to basically have their stock completely tank.
Westinghouse just declare bankruptcy? I think I read that.
They're talking about it. They haven't, but they're trying to figure out how on earth they're going to deal with this debt situation. They probably will have to declare bankruptcy. And so but then they come back to, well, in the future, we're going to need enormous amounts of electricity to satisfy
the growing numbers of people around the world who want to live in a lifestyle like similar to what we have in the United States or what they have in Europe. And, you know, that's sort of a valid point because that definitely is the goal of what's starting to happen in China. And China significantly is the only country in the world that really has a large-scale nuclear power program. They're building, up until recently, they were building a lot of coal plants. Now that's sort of tailed off. They are still building a lot of nuclear plants. They're building a lot of wind and solar. They're just growing enormously fast in all sectors of electricity generation. And so the nuclear power people are saying that for the whole world, they'll have to do that. But China has the advantage of being a command economy where, you know, if they decide to spend money on something, they can just go print more of it. You know, their economy is built by their government. And there's speculation as to how far the bubble, the economic bubble in China can expand before it pops and sort of deflates itself. They build whole cities in which no one's living because construction companies have enough clout to get paid to build a city. And then they sit there empty, you know. And this kind of thing has happened with wind and solar and with nuclear. I'm not sure about nuclear, but it would surprise me if it's also nuclear, where they build over capacity because somebody has the political clout to get something sited and built, but then it isn't necessarily coordinated or really necessary. So
yeah, they just build it for the jobs. Well, Westinghouse did declare bankruptcy yesterday, as it turns out. And this article, I just pulled up an article. It said yesterday, this is dated March 29th, Westinghouse files for bankruptcy in a blow to nuclear power. A Westinghouse project in Waynesboro, Georgia. It looks like a huge site, like 5 or 6 miles, gigantic. Remains unfinished, is in doubt after the bankruptcy filing. So there's a huge plant that's like halfway built in Georgia, thank God, that might not get built. But it's many of the company's injuries are self-inflicted.
Well, that's exactly what I was talking about. I didn't realize they'd already done it.
They did it yesterday. That's huge.
But yeah, there's these two, the Vogtle reactors in Georgia and then two in South Carolina that are all unfinished and have been behind schedule already 3 years and looking like it's going to be maybe 4 or 5 or maybe never even finished.
Wow.
And these are the AP1000 new reactors that were supposed to be fail-safe because they were passively cooled in an accident. You didn't need to have working, electricity to run pumps because just gravity would provide the power in an accident. All kinds of other technical problems were supposedly solved, but they just, you know... These are big, complicated machines that are hard to build, and
they take a long time to build. Actually, these plants have been. Well, I think I read a plant that was going on for over 20 years. They were building it.
The one in Watts Bar, they started in the 80s, and they didn't finish until last year. That's the one that's been completed. Right. It's one of the old style ones that they had a gap of, I think, about 18 years where they didn't do any construction on it at all, and they picked back up again and finished it.
Chuck, you work it with this day in and day out. That's your entire focus, is you focus entirely on dealing with, you know, landing a final blow to the CGS and the nuclear industry on the Northwest. When you're around, like right now, you're not on the West Coast, you're on the East Coast doing some business, but when you're talking to people, is there any connectivity that these are all, it's all one? I get this sense that our journey to close down the Columbia Generating Station, that we're actually more united across the nation, that the issues of the nuclear industry is what really does unite us. But for some reason, it's almost as if we're just not allowed to talk about it. It's so bizarre. I mean, only in small circles and only the way they want us. Like, just the mention that I, what my belief, and this is just, I've come up with this intuitively about the this avian flu thing. It's impossible that we have been dropping bombs on this planet and then all of a sudden the climate goes awry and it has no effect on it. To me, that's incomprehensible. So, but the, yeah. Again, it's all well-behaved. It's all this perfect conversation. Is there any sense of urgency that you get when you're talking to people that are actively engaged in it, that this has, we have to figure out a way to step this up, to shut this stuff down?
I think it really depends on the community a lot. Like where I am right now in Massachusetts, they've been extremely successful in closing reactors. We were out in Western Mass where the Yankee Row was closed years ago. It was a smaller reactor. It had some problems, and they were able to get it shut down. And then not far from them across the border, the state border, was Vermont Yankee, which basically a lot of the same activists have been fighting to close down for, you know, decades, and finally succeeded in doing it about 2 years ago. And then on the coast, you have the Pilgrim reactor, which is also another GE boiling water reactor, so as was the one in Vermont. And it's scheduled to be closed in 2019, but they're trying to get it closed down earlier still because it's having a lot of problems. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which is kind of a pussycat agency that doesn't enforce terribly strongly, rates them as one of the worst performers in the country, and the activists were able to get internal documents that showed just how poorly run it is there, and they've been publicizing them. But so I think in some parts of the country, in New England and some parts of the Great Lakes where people have gotten active, you know, in California and now in the Northwest, you've got people fighting to close reactors. But then there are other parts of the country like the South where the politics has favored nuclear energy more so. Now, the fact that these brand new reactors are falling flat on their face and the ratepayers are going to be stuck with a whole lot of utility increase payments that they'll have to make for zero return may help. I know it will help tremendously in Georgia and South Carolina and in the rest of the South to discredit nuclear energy.
How does that work? What do you mean that payments? Explain that a little bit. What do you mean? How would that work?
Well, these are privately owned utilities that are building these reactors primarily. I think there's a public utility involved with it, like maybe 25% of the ownership in Georgia, but the rest of it's private utilities that make a profit. And the way that their regulation is set up in both Georgia and South Carolina is they get the bill in advance. Rather than having to borrow money, which would be expensive, they get to essentially borrow from the ratepayers to complete projects. So they can take, with a lot of projects, if you're a utility, you know, you might have to finish construction of something before you could bill the ratepayers for it. But with a big project like this, back in the 70s and 80s, the utility commissions began allowing utilities to charge in advance so that they wouldn't have to pay the interest on borrowing, but they would be able to complete big projects like nuclear plants. Then, as we had all these cost overruns and failed nuclear plants all over the country, commissions began to take away that right. And in Oregon, we actually passed a ballot measure in 78 that took away the right of utility to bill you in advance for unfinished utility projects.
So like that utility project in Georgia that's unfinished, those ratepayers are going to be charged for that?
That in the South, they never took away that right. They still have the right to take. They just,
wow.
So it's very attractive to, you know, you can build big projects and know that you're going to get your money, you know, one way
wow.
or another, whether it's finished or not. And in fact, you get a rate of return based upon if expenses are higher, then a percentage rate of return, guaranteed rate of return, means you make more money.
Wow.
What happened in a lot of places around the country was that ratepayers saw their, you know, experienced sticker shock when their rates started going up. They began taking measures to use less energy, and the demand flattened out. And so the need for the nuclear plants that they were anticipating went away because the price went up. That was another one of the economic problems that happened to nuclear power in the 70s and 80s was demand suddenly went from being exponential growth to flat, you know, or growing at maybe 2 or 3%.
Well, Chuck, we just have a couple minutes left, but I do want to ask you this question. Is in your inner circles with all these people that spend their lives doing this every day, is there any conversation with the utility companies, the nuclear industry, about changing their focus from building new nuclear power plants to, say, an industry where they really actually learn to remediate and reverse the harm that they've already caused? Like, I view that as a burgeoning industry that hasn't even been tapped into yet, because they've caused so much trouble, so much harm to our environment and to people. That's a whole new industry, and on just on how to heal the planet from the harm they've done. Is there any discussion about that?
Well, it is an industry, and it's recognized. The nuclear Insider newsletter regularly has reports on that. They get very excited about all the new reactor projects and extending the life of the old ones, but then they have whole big sections on decommissioning and how that's a growth industry, you know, of shutting down nuclear power plants and taking them apart and cleaning up the ground and so forth. Wow. And of course, at all of our U.S. Department of Energy facilities, there's been enormous job growth. At Hanford, you know, that is the job at Hanford, is cleanup.
Well, that's good. Well, look, Chuck, we've got 10 seconds, so I'm going to have to cut you off. I hope you join us again. This has gone so fast. Thanks. We'll talk to you soon.
That's great.